You're listening to A Certain Degree. It's me, I'm Nick, and on this episode, there's another Nick, Nick D'Alessandro, a younger, faster, hairier version of me. Not hairier, I'm the hairiest. But he is also an amazingly talented podcaster and storyteller. He works not only for the community paper, but he does a podcast called Wait 5 Minutes, which you should really listen to. We also spend a lot of time on this episode talking about the swans of Lake Eola. Enjoy. The Beths on WPRK, Winter Park, Florida. You're listening to A Certain Degree. Good morning. My name is Nick Giorgudiou. I have to say that because today I have a very special guest, and I love having a very special guest. I love having – he's my favorite guest. Don't tell any of the other guests. And Nick D'Alessandro is here. Nick D'Alessandro, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Nick and Nick. You used to do a show with another Nick.
I did. I used to host a show on this station called Twin Nicks, which was, I feel like, even more appropriate now with the size of our current beards. That's, I feel like, more accurate.
It's very, I think you got the better mustache.
Yeah, but you've got the gray.
I have the gray.
I mean, it's distinguished.
Yeah.
It adds to the, it's really important. I'm like looking at my beard every once in a while when I clean it going, ooh, is that silver in there? Is there a little flecks of that in
there? Come
on. I'm like, it'll get there eventually.
Get out in the sun. Get it a little like orange or red.
Yeah.
That'll be perfect.
Yeah,
Nick D'Alessandro is here to talk about a lot of different things. He does a lot of things around Orlando, around Central Florida, around Florida, and including and most importantly, writing for the community paper here in Orlando, which I'm the managing editor of. And I was happy to bring him on to be one of our writers and now one of our columnists with a column called Local Knowledge Necessary. And I'm really excited about that one.
Yeah, me too. I've always wanted to get to rant about my thoughts about history in Florida.
Yeah.
And you've given me a brand new venue to do that. And I love every time I see it, I'm like, I can't believe somebody lets me do this.
Yeah. Well, you're good at it.
Thank you. Appreciate
that. That's what you get. That's the punishment for being talented is that you have to, use your talent.
You lose a lot of sleep.
Yeah. So, Nick, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you are. I hate using labels, but we'll go ahead and do it anyway. Podcaster.
Yeah.
Rollins alum.
That is true. Yeah. Happy to be back.
And let's see, what else? Author.
Technically, yes, that is true, which
I mean,
is also nuts.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'll just be quiet.
Yeah. No. You don't have to be quiet, but it's hard sometimes to think of ourselves as certain things where other people just see it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So author/writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Journalist.
Yeah.
I would say.
I take these things. I'm proud of those things. The author thing is always crazy to me because that was such a project in, like, we were still in quarantine. I contributed to the book Florida that A24 published in 2022. And that was such a thing that was done in, like, quarantine with a friend of mine who is a writer for the Tampa Bay Times. And she was gathering writers to do this and was like, would you like to contribute to this? And I was like, oh, yeah, sure. I don't know. And so we talked about it. And eventually she gave me a whole list of things to write about. And I spent months and months and months gathering these stories. And then all of a sudden, like, the book is out. And I'm like, this book is like the funniest thing was it was you can see it in Architectural Digest videos sometimes when people will show around their nice house and all of a sudden you're like Orville Peck, the country singer. It's just like on his coffee table. Our book is
beautiful. It's a coffee table book.
I think it's about as good of a coffee table book as you can get without being just one full of photos.
Yeah.
You know, it's beautiful.
It is gorgeous. It's very well designed. And you wrote, what are those section or sections?
I wrote the Central Florida and the Space Coast sections.
Yeah.
Which is just, it was originally just supposed to be Central Florida. And then they were like, well, you're not far from the Space Coast. Could you do that too? Sure.
Yeah.
Sure I can. I made astronaut ice cream in my oven. I went to Gatorland and talked to them for a long time. And yeah, I got to do a lot. I wrote an entire piece about the Wizard gift shop in Kissimmee.
Oh, yeah.
The giant wizard head gift shop. They were like, what are some things you can buy in there? And I'm like, well, to be honest with you, it's mostly
garbage.
Unofficial Disney merch that they should not be selling legally. But I found like 10 things that I could not believe, which was like a baby gator in formaldehyde.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's okay. They called it like a miniature palm. There was just like a little fake palm tree.
Yep.
I cannot believe that they let me publish that.
That's perfect.
I'm proud of that.
Having grown up in gift shops, I remember each of those things. So we had the baby sharks and the formaldehyde. Yeah. Gross.
Very gross.
So gross. Well, we have a lot to talk about today, so we'll be going over a little bit more of what Nick is doing in general for the community paper, but also for the podcast Wait 5 Minutes. I would encourage you to go check that out wherever you get podcasts, Wait 5 Minutes. It'll be not only history talk about Florida in and around Central Florida, but all over Florida.
Yeah.
Also, a little bit of politics,
yeah.
A little bit of other stuff going on in Florida that affects us.
Yeah, usually I start the year with a lot of politics because obviously that's when the Florida legislature is in session. So there's a lot of stories coming out, a lot of, you know, hot button issues and important things going on. And I usually try to just start the beginning of the year by being like, here's a bill that's maybe going on. I usually get to do an interview with Representative Ana Escamani too. So I sort of do a bunch of topics right at the top that I'm like, hey, I know this is heavy to start the year, but like everybody's feeling motivated. There's a lot going on. If you want to engage with this stuff, here's the stuff that you might not know. Here's how to get yourself more involved. And I always find that it comes from a place of I didn't know for a long time, especially directly after college. That was how the show started. It was the 2018 gubernatorial election, and you know, we were going to have a new governor for the first time in 8 years at that point. And I didn't know what they were talking about. I didn't know who the candidates were. I was super engaged in that idea, so I started writing the show from that perspective. And now I would say that that's the like vestigial part of the show that still hangs on, because it's very much a history show. It's very much like an environmental show, talking to professionals and environmentalist show. But that part of the politics will always sort of be at the core of it, because it was so motivating to me, because I'm like, I just am curious, and I feel like especially younger people, at least at that time in 2018, I feel like we were like, how do we get involved?
Right.
How do we do something about this? And you know, I was 22 and was like, I don't know, I want to do something, I want to know about these things, I don't know, I'm an adult in the world and I just don't know how to engage with these things. So it's definitely part of me that I still try to focus on whenever I can, even though it is, as I say to my producer, frequently kind of a bummer.
Well, what I like about that, though, is that you're not just reading headlines.
Yeah, right? I try not to.
Like, you are going into and delving into whatever the topic is, and you're not trying to cover every possible bill that is going through the legislature at any given time. Most bills don't even make it through the planning phases, so there really wouldn't be no reason for that. But you pick some topics, you dig into it, you understand it, and you put that information out there, and you know, people can listen to it and take what they want from it.
And I think a little bit too is because it's a history show, I also try to find political stories that have some historical context. Like if you need to know, I've written about the Black Bears a fair bit on the show, because it's been a lot of stories with them. But like, you need to understand that like the hunting was going on at a certain point. And then in the 1970s, we like changed our relationship with hunting bears. And I feel like if there's anything where you could sort of take a present day issue and go, actually, this stems back to a problem that's been going on for a century, and you can explain that entire context, that's my like favorite thing to do, because there are amazing political reporters, especially here in Orlando and in Florida at large, who do such great work talking about the legislature, local politics. They report on it in such an amazing degree. And I use those resources and cite those reporters all the time in that show, because I'm like, hey, you should read them. They're doing the in-depth, really, really good political work. I'm just here to go at a different perspective and go, if you like me are like, why are we even talking about this?
Right.
Like, how did this even come to be? I try to go at that angle and go in depth. I remember during the 2024 election, there was a conversation about a specific amendment that got a majority of its votes, but it didn't get 70%, which is what you need for an amendment to pass in Florida. And I saw a lot of people being like, what? This got like 67% of the vote and it didn't pass.
Yeah.
And I did a little research on this and read a couple of reporting from around the state of people being like, how did this come to be? And of course, there's history and precedent and explanation as to how that came to be. So I try to be like, it's a show about context. You know, you need to, I'll give you the blurb up top, but you need to understand all that back there in order to understand what we're talking about in this exact moment.
Yeah, I love everything about that.
I love it.
Can I, just because I want to know more about it, and if you need help with it, I'm happy to help you research it. But what I would really love to know, because I've heard stories about it.
Yeah.
And maybe you've already done this.
Sure.
So I apologize. Like, I haven't listened to every
there's a lot of episodes. It's like 300 episodes.
But the swans at Lake Eola.
Yeah. Huh?
Whether you are for it or against it, so they need to be better taken care of.
Oh,
but
yeah.
What I've been curious about, because I did some initial research on it,
yeah,
is how this even came to be.
Yeah.
Like, why are there swans at Lake Eola to begin with? And there's a story.
Yes, there is.
As there always is. But is that the real story? Is that true? And then why did we keep doing it?
Yeah, I think right.
Have you done that before?
I have written about it in the show a little bit, but I actually wrote about it a lot more for Reflections, the Florida Historical magazine that they do.
Yeah.
So I did that for their Orlando anniversary last year. I did a piece about the swans. I did write about it, and it's one of those things where you feel like there should be some trick, complex lore, but it's really straightforward. I believe the man's name was Charles Lord. I believe that's the name of the guy.
The English guy.
Yeah, he was an English guy, and it's exactly what it seems like. Swans are very popular in England, and he was moving to Florida, and he was moving to Orlando. And this was in that era of Orlando where post-Civil War, I believe, where like a lot of people were coming to town. A lot of rich Northerners were coming to town and doing what they did in most cities around Florida, which is trying to sort of build it up and make it almost resemble the northern cities, have a main street. I mean, we're in Winter Park. Winter Park is a perfect example of that. They wanted it to be sort of like Boston in central Florida. And so Orlando was a lot of that. And people like Charles Lord were coming in and they were investing in building bigger houses, developing these, you know, beautiful scenic neighborhoods and stuff like that. So if my memory is correct, was that he brought like two pairs of swans. He brought white swans and he brought black swans, I believe, as well. And I think they just stuck around forever. I think they just mated and then more swans came in and he brought in more swans to replace any that had died. And then they would mate and it just grew into a massive population, and he lived right in that area along Lake Eola. So that's the area that really they were centralized on. And it's funny. It's one of those things where, you know, not to keep comparing to Winter Park, but we have the peacocks in Winter Park, and it's basically the same idea.
Somebody brought them in.
Some rich person was like, I need peacocks. So the swans were kind of the same thing, except they wanted it to be like, look, there's these beautiful lakes around here, and swans love living in still lakes with little to no predators. And that's they have just, I feel like it's a natural ecosystem for swans to live in, even though they are completely not native.
And so not only not native, but there hasn't been like a formalized city organization to take care of these swans. So
it's volunteer based
nowadays.
How did
it live and literally live for this long, for 100 years?
I think
because it just celebrated 100 years.
Yeah, I think so people just take care of it. I think people just make an active effort to, because I know that there's people, I've seen social media accounts who are like, this is sort of our adopted swan. Like, we take care of this specific swan. And I think that, honestly, it's one of those things where, like, clearly the park managers at Lake Eola are taking care of these things, these animals, and feeding them. Well, obviously, we've had some issues with them this year, which has been so tough to hear, that there's been a bird flu issue that's caused a lot of loss of these swans. Yeah. But I think it's just, it's funny because it feels just so totally informal, you know? We have murals of them everywhere. We have statues of them. Like, it's so become
it was
a part of the identity.
With the city of Orlando changing its flag, it was surprising that the swan didn't end up on it.
And yet it still is Lake Eola. You know what I mean? Like, our flag still is so connected to that central image of the state, of the city. Yeah. I don't know. The swans are such a classic example to me of, like, community accepting a thing about itself. You know what I mean? It's almost like these rich people brought this into town, and there's so much about Orlando that is interesting, and we have so much iconography, but I don't know, you need a mascot in a lot of ways. You need a thing to go, that's our guy, that's our thing. And so the swan, I feel like, really easily took that away from any, I don't know, what else could it be? Squirrels?
Gators.
But so many other states have got mosquitoes. So many other cities have kind of got that cover, though. Like, you know, Gainesville's got the gators, obviously locked down. Like, I feel like so many other parts, other cities have sort of claimed a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love that Orlando has claimed this bird that doesn't make any sense for it to be here at all.
I like that. And I was thinking about it too, because I looked it up. I was like, obviously other places have swan programs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they really don't. So there was maybe one, Brendan O'Connor did some really good reporting on it for the Orlando Shine, and mentioned, I think there was a town up in Minnesota did it for about 13 years and then killed it. Not the swans, but the program. Lakeland has a swan program. Well,
yeah, Lakeland's
had
the swans too. Lakeland is trying to jump on our thing. That's our
fine.
Thing, guys.
That's fine. Lakeland is will always be our little sibling.
Yeah, they're the little brother. No offense. Lovely.
But the other thing I was thinking about, if it was 1925-26, it feels like a really like kind of Great Gatsby kind of thing.
100%. Like, that is so, yes.
A wealthy guy wanting to party, wanting to show off, and so he brought in some swamps.
I'm going
to
get real. I'm going to get real history dork on you about our, about Florida with this, because what I always talk about is, you know, when the Great Depression began, Florida had already been experiencing a version of the Great Depression, because throughout the 20s, we had had the land boom. So parcels of land were being sold for just like pennies. It's just like so cheap across Florida. People were buying up property, building cities, building mansions. And they, you know, nothing was going to like parks or like healthy development, right? It was the 20s, so it's all abundance. So people are building places like West Palm Beach. They're building massive air. Miami basically gets sort of bought up in a lot of that era. And the market explodes. The bubble just pops. So all of Florida is thrown into a real estate depression right before the actual Great Depression hits. So when the Great Depression hits, it basically has like very little impact on Florida because Florida's already in it. Florida's already in that pit.
Yeah.
But it's exactly what you're talking about, where rich people were coming from the north to develop this land. Most of them were not even living here full time, though I do think Charles Lord was living here full time. But they, it's so funny how much of it is that Gatsby thing of being like, look, we have this brand new spot of tropical land, palm trees and cypress trees, and it's so green and beautiful, and we're definitely going to be just fine doing exactly what we did in New York, and I'm sure nothing bad's going to happen.
Yep, that's exactly right. I love everything about that. Well, I think we can dig into it. And actually, you know, I think there's a debate around whether or not to continue it.
Sure. I mean, it's been so hard reading these stories about the loss of these swans in the last couple of weeks. I mean, it's people care about them so much, especially, like I said, the volunteers who sort of adopt certain swans and have safe spaces for them. They're having to like quarantine these birds from each other because of this illness. It really sucks. Like, it's really heartbreaking to see stories like that going on because... Yeah. I mean, I joke about them being non-native, but they're basically unobtrusive to the environment in Lake Eola, or else they'd be not there. Like,
right. Well, and they're kept there. Let's be clear.
Yeah, for sure.
There are some wild swans
there.
There's a lot of geese. There's a lot of ducks.
Yeah.
But the swans that are part of the Lake Eola family, for lack of a better term for it, their wings are clipped.
Yes.
So they cannot leave, or it would be very difficult for them to leave. And so, yeah, so more of a formalized program. I think it's in a way the good part about this, which, you know, these poor things. But the good thing about this is it really has put a spotlight on what to do with Lake Eola in terms of the cleanliness of it, in terms of the water quality, all of that. Because that's not a real lake. That is it is a former sinkhole.
It is sinkhole, yes. That is
storm runoff.
Yeah.
So that's an issue as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's like it's could not be in a better location to be sort of a festival hub, so to speak, if you know what I mean. I feel like that's very theme park language. Like, it reminds me of like an Epcot, the like big area around the edge of Epcot. That's what like Yola, I feel like, should be. And it is, you know, there's lots of events there. But I also feel like it is being a local, lived here my whole life, born here. I feel like going to Lake Eola is just hard to get to. Like, I feel like I'm coming from the suburbs where I live, getting to that area is so frustrating. And I'm always like, how do we make this better?
Yeah.
And I know the city's always worried about stuff like that. That's definitely on their mind. But I'm like, yeah, I feel like Lake Eola is our most complex, centralized area in town for some reason.
I remember when they had to redo the fountain because it got struck by lightning.
Yeah,
so it took a while to raise the money to do that. I can't remember how long it was down for, maybe a couple years.
Yeah.
And at one point it was the biggest single piece of plastic, like formed plastic in the world.
Oh, that rules.
I think that was the old one.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so what I was kind of hoping when they would redo it is like this Bellagio level water.
Oh, yeah.
Show. Now, you know, they can't do that between the swan boats and the actual birds, but it would have been kind of cool to have something like that, you know, just 8 and 10 every night.
Yeah.
Here's
a little
downtown.
Show. Come see it. Yeah. Oh, man, that's so funny. That was a story I've wanted to do a couple times. And I remember reaching out. My friend at the History Center, Orange County Regional History Center, is Rachel Williams. And she also contributes to the paper. My first column was opposite her writing. And I texted her like, we're page buddies. We share a page. But I remember a couple years ago, I reached out to her and I was like, any good history about the Lake Eola Fountain? She was like, a guy built it. I was like, yeah, nothing really to it. A guy built it. They wanted it. And there it is.
Yeah. Oh, you should get a chance. I think you can still go out there and get in it for the repair parts. Yeah.
What?
There's like a little door on the side and you go in and if they need to repair it.
I'll urban explore it. I'll get in there.
Yeah. We'll have to swim out there anytime.
Yeah, it's fine.
Anytime you want. All right. Well, Nick, where else can people find out more about you? What are some of your social handles and that sort of thing?
The Instagram for Wait 5 Minutes is at WFMPod. You can also send me an email at WFMPod@gmail.com. The show is just Wait 5 Minutes. I always say it's the word, not the number, because when I tell people they type wait and then they'll type the numeral five, I'm like, no. I mean, it'll still show up, but Wait 5 Minutes, WFM. But it's on all podcast streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Nice. It's on Podbean if you have that one. That's where it sort of lives. But yeah, it comes out every Monday. I'm on a little break this week because I did 7 episodes and we're going to do 7 episodes coming up. So next episode is coming out on Monday. I just finished recording it and editing it last night. I'm really excited. I mean, doing all those political things to start the season was really fun. And now I've got a bunch of wild places that I found and I'm writing about. So I just talked to a historian in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, that has a connection to Florida history that I'm really excited about. And I naturally talk about Orlando history in the midst of talking about the Battle of Gettysburg.
Perfect. No notes on that because I am very Orlando centric myself.
Yes. Yes.
So find out more about that. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the topics coming up. If you miss any of the show, you can listen to this show at toacertaindegree.com or look for To a Certain Degree wherever you get your podcast. And that's T-O. So we have a numbering issue with both our show names. And and you can actually read a lot more, including a story about Blue Springs Park that Nick wrote. He braved the weather and went out there to see some fireflies. And that's going on at Blue Springs Park.
What a night. That was so
through
beautiful.
April 14th. So we'll talk about more about that.
Yes.
And some events that are coming up and music. Let's play some music right now. This is Fly By Midnight in the Night. Where was this is all music that
these are
Nick
all things that
out.
I listen to while I drive constantly.
Perfect. In the Night, Fly By Midnight. I'm sensing a theme.
I like things that came out in the last like 10 years, but maybe could have been produced from about 1982 to 1998.
Okay, perfect. On WPRK Winter Park, Florida, you're listening to A Certain Degree.